Hello and welcome. This is your host, Elsbeth Magilton. Welcome back to the Empower series on the Girls Code Lincoln podcast. The speakers in this series have a variety of careers and backgrounds because we know that confidence and leadership skills matter in any industry. People, young and old, benefit from hearing confident and underrepresented voices in our community. This spring, in conjunction with the Women Lead Conference, sponsored by the University of Nebraska Colleges of Business and Law, we're reviving the Empower series on the podcast. We've invited the speakers at this one-day conference to join us for interviews that will come out as standalone episodes in the Empower series. We are so pleased to welcome the first woman to ever lead the Lincoln, Nebraska Police Department, Chief Teresa Ewens, to the show. Chief Ewens, could you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, my name is Teresa Ewens. I come from California. I know California is a little large, but both Southern and Northern California, mainly Northern California. Being a police chief, well, first, this is my 27th year in the profession. I can't believe it's been 27 years, but it's been 27 years of incredible, gratifying work, I would say, and definitely highly recommended for everyone. But, you know, I coming to Lincoln was something that was unexpected. I was approached and just got to know the mayor and, you know, through the process, really kind of found myself wanting to be here. And so here I am in Lincoln, Nebraska.
And we're so glad you're here. Yeah. So you told us a little bit about where you're from, but we always like to start at the beginning with your childhood. So can you tell us a little bit more about where you grew up?
Yeah, so I was born in Santa Monica. My family, both my parents were born in the LA area and were raised in the LA area. But we were living in Malibu, of all places, and it wasn't Malibu, the one that everyone, you know, knows now. It was actually a really beautiful community. I'm definitely a beach kid. That's how I grew up, and I love the water. And so we moved when I was 10 up to Northern California to a small town called Danville in the Bay Area. And so, you know, I stayed there for the majority of my lifetime. High school and went to college, went to multiple colleges. But really, the Bay Area was my home for a really long time.
Has it been hard to move to probably the most landlocked state in the U.S.? Have you found a good lake, maybe?
Yeah, you know what? It's a change. But it's also, you know, I love the sunsets. I love the weather here. It's very different, and that's how I look at it. It's just a different climate. I mean, altogether. And I joke because I made it through winter, even though it wasn't really winter, but I get to say I made it through winter. But you know, it's okay. The ocean is always there. I can always go visit.
Yeah. So did you grow up wanting to be a police officer and did you want to grow up wanting to be a leader?
I grew up, wanting to not be behind a desk and be a police officer. I wanted to really help other people, and you know, I've said this, you know, a bunch of times, but a police officer came to one of my schools and said what he did, and I really loved the idea of helping others, and so that's, to my mom's chagrin, I continued down that road. I did go to college because she really wanted me to go to college, but never really saw myself in this position. It was through a lot of great mentors and people that encouraged me to move up through the ranks and take positions to create change. I mean, as you move up in rank, you can create more and more change. And that's the important part. You know, you see things when you come in any profession. I mean, it's not just law enforcement, but any profession. And you want to make changes, positive changes, and not be like other people many times, or other generations even. And so in order to make those changes, you need to lead.
So you mentioned there that you did go to college, and you kind of made it sound like maybe you wouldn't have had to. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you become a police officer and then also your choice to go to college?
Well, you know, to get in the San Francisco Police Department, you didn't need a degree. You just needed your your high school diploma. There's a lot of police departments like that. But, you know, I really wanted, I didn't, having a learning disability, I had a very difficult time in school. I didn't know how to learn. And so it wasn't until much later in life that I actually learned how to learn, and I was actually pretty good at it. And so it really empowered me to do more. And so now it's really, I'm very, very curious. I was very curious before, and, you know, I read a lot and tried to educate myself, but it wasn't until I really learned how to learn again, did that open up for me.
So where did you go to college?
Oh, there's too many.
Same. I understand that.
I ended up going to, you know, I was a soccer player, and so really it's where it took me. So I ended up at Sonoma State playing Division II soccer, and then playing in Sacramento during the off season. You know, it was a great time. I met a lot of great people, a lot of national team players, just had a really great time. There was no professional teams back then, or I would have probably dabbled in that. But I would have come back to be a police officer because that's what I always wanted to do. And that's what I told everybody I was going to do, which is funny in college. But I don't think anyone believed me. But yeah.
But they should have.
Yeah, they should have, yes.
So what was your major then when you graduated?
Criminal justice.
And did you do any internships or externships throughout your criminal justice program?
You know, it wasn't required back then, but when I did leave school, I did a couple of internships with the U.S. Marshals and did that. I was interested in going down that path as well, but it really wasn't what I wanted because there wasn't a lot of community engagement when it comes to those positions on the federal side, mm-hmm. And so I really wanted to be in communities.
So that tells us a little bit about your first job. What was your first job coming out of those internships?
Oh, I had three jobs. So let me just explain. So during that time, there was a freeze on hiring. And I always wanted to go back to LA. So it was really between LAPD and San Francisco. And so in order to pay my rent, I worked at a restaurant. I coached soccer at University of San Francisco. I did my internship and I had one other job. I can't remember what it was, but yeah, I had to pay for everything. In order for me to get that one job that I really wanted, I worked a lot, but a lot. So.
And how did it come to be? How did you get that first job that you really wanted?
You know, I was applying between LA and San Francisco. San Francisco was the first organization that offered me a job, and I took it. So I went with it.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the beginning of your career and what that was like in San Francisco?
Yeah, you know what? I was afforded a lot of opportunities. I was always a person that was taught that when you're in law enforcement, you don't say no to jobs that are offered to you. Especially when there's gaps and they need people. And so I was allowed to do ride bikes. There's beats. So Lincoln doesn't really have this, but there's foot beats, bike beats, things like that, where you go and you really get more engaged with parts of the community. So I was in an area called Mission. It's called Mission Station. And so I was riding bikes, and I was walking the beat. I was asked to do plain clothes, which is, you know, you do mainly narcotic work, gangs, robberies, more of the violent stuff. I did that for a period of time. And then I stayed there actually for 9 years and then got promoted to sergeant. And so it was a great, I had great people to work with. I had great bosses. I had huge experience. So I learned a ton from them.
Can you tell us a little bit about the transition from being on the beat? You know, you hear that in TV shows. So I feel really cool saying it out loud. That sounds incredibly interesting. And the transition from that to being a sergeant and starting to kind of take on some leadership roles.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we talk about it here is that how do you transition from being an officer to being a leader? It's not easy to transition, because you had your hat on for so long being an officer, and then you have the, you know, supervisory hat. And so it does take time. It takes, you know, having mentors around you, having good leaders around you. But leadership doesn't just start when you get promoted. You have to be a leader when you're an officer. You got to be a leader all the way through, no matter what your rank is. And I think that, you know, that realizing that at some point, a lot of times it's when you're out on the scene of something like really big and you're just directing and you're getting stuff done and people are coming to you, making decisions. You know, that's when you realize, you know, I've really kind of transitioned into that leadership role, but it's a learning thing. I mean, it really is. You just have to get to that point where you feel comfortable. Even people that you've known for a long time, you have to correct them if their behavior is not right. But you work with people, and that's the big part of it.
You know, I was working with a 9-year-old the other day, and she said to me, we were talking about leadership, it was Girl Scouts. So we're talking about leadership, and I said, well, what's a leader? Can you tell me what you think of when you think of a leader? And one of the girls said, somebody who gets to make all the decisions. And then one of the other girls kind of quietly was like, you mean has to make all the decisions? And she was a girl who naturally leads quite often in our group. And I thought, gosh, what interesting self-reflection and insight there is that it is gets to, but it also has to make all the decisions. And I like your example there of being the person who takes control and says, this is what we're going to do. And makes those choices. So I think that's a powerful and cool example. And it just made me think of that.
I think good leadership is also about empowering people around you to make decisions and know when to really reach out to that next level of supervision, either to get help or to, you mean, if I have to make a decision, fine, but I'm going to empower my people to make decisions, because you have to make it. It's easy for you to push it off to somebody else and have them make a decision, but it's harder to be the person making a decision. And that's at every level. And so it's interesting when you just said that. So
I just love watching particularly young women, but any young person start to really process through that and think about the ups and the downs of being a leader, and that there's the wonderful parts and then there's the really hard parts. And it's a skill that you can hone and develop, and not just a natural inclination.
It is a development. It absolutely is.
So can you walk us from being a sergeant in San Francisco to where you are now?
Oh, geez. So we had many different ranks in San Francisco. So it went from officer, sergeant, lieutenant, captain, commander, deputy chief, assistant chief. So there's 8 different positions, right? So I left being a commander. You know, I would say that 26 years is a good amount of time to learn what you need to learn to become a chief. All the hills I had to climb, all the obstacles that, you know, the things that I failed at, the things I was good at, you have to have those in order to understand what it's like to be a chief. Because if you don't have that, then you don't have perspective. A lot of people, you know, think that making a mistake is, you know, the worst thing ever. And it's not. It is absolutely about learning yourself and not making the same mistakes, but also putting that information forward. When you make a mistake, you got to put it to your people as well. You have to acknowledge it. They have to understand it, what not to do. I don't think we do enough of that. And especially on the admitting when you're wrong, it's easy to sit there and say, oh, you know, it's my assistant chief's fault or my captain's fault. That's not it. You own your department. And that's the number one thing I learned, you know, rising up through the ranks, is that you have to own your house. And, you know, if something happened right now, knock on wood, in this department, it's mine. And it's for me to answer. And so I would say that's pretty much number one.
Absolutely. that's a lot of pressure. But it's also a lot of accountability, and there's power in that.
There is, because, you know, what is it that our young officers are seeing? I hold them to standards, but I don't hold anyone else to standards. It doesn't work that way. And if anything, I hold myself to higher standards and expect people around me to do the same. But we need to understand, we're human. Everyone makes mistakes. It's that simple.
What is it like transitioning from a very large city like San Francisco, very different topography, location, population, community, to a smaller Midwestern city, college town, very, very different types of populations, I would imagine. What's that transition been like?
It's been interesting. It's not, you know, Lincoln is a great city. And people underestimate it, I think, in many ways. You know, I've been around the world, and it's not being in a small town. And this isn't a small town, by the way. San Francisco is 49 square miles. I don't even know it. I think it's double here. It's huge. But, you know, I think when I say people underestimate Lincoln, I think that just the people, the growth, the direction in which we're going, the mayor and her vision on, you know, the direction of the city, the directors I work with, my partners, I really enjoy every part of it because they have a vision that Lincoln and it's something I do believe in, and growth and being open and really inclusive when it comes to the community itself. The community actually makes decisions. And I think that is so important because we, you know, in law enforcement, you don't necessarily, you know, can trust that the community is going to make the right decision. You have to guide them to a certain extent. But I do think that we have partnerships. Other cities can't say that. And what I mean by that is that it's kind of taken out of the hands right now of law enforcement, and we're not being heard because of our expertise. A lot of violence is going on throughout the United States in large cities that doesn't need to happen. And so I just feel like I'm in a really great position. The people in this department are amazing. And I've gotten nothing but welcoming. I've been here for 8 months. I feel like I've been here forever. But it's only been 8 months. And, you know, every day I'm pleasantly surprised by the work of our cops, but also the support that we get from the city. So
that makes me proud to hear. That's excellent. So on this part of our show, we like to do fill in the blank. So we're going to talk about the best, hardest, scariest, and most rewarding parts of your career right now. A little bit more of the day in the life of a police chief. So what is the best part of being a police chief?
Really, our young members. But I can't express to you how gratifying it is when I, you know, hear of a case that they went and solved because of their hard work, because of our technology that we have. That, you know, they followed the trail and they solved these crimes. And I'm not kidding you. It's been this week. I think there's like two or three cases which they didn't have to do anything with it. They could have just written the police report and then went on their merry way, but they literally worked very hard to solve the crime.
Cool. What is the hardest part of your career?
I want to do more for our people so they feel appreciated. But they can only understand that. My appreciation, the community's appreciation, by living it. I can tell them all day long that they people love them, that I appreciate them. But, you know, the hardest part is getting to them and them understanding how much I really truly care about the work that they do. And as individuals, not a number, but really as individuals.
So this next one is, what is the scariest part? And most of the time when we ask this, right, this is sort of metaphorical because we're talking to coders and we're talking to scientists and, yes. and other folks. You all really have some truly scary moments and life-threatening moments. So you can take this metaphorically as in what's the most kind of intimidating or however you want to take it. But what is the scariest part of what you do?
For me, the scariest is it is failing, and failure meaning someone gets hurt, whether it be somebody in my department or the community, and we could have done something. Not being prepared as a police department, you know, that's scary to me because I have high expectations of who we should be and what we do. I love this profession, and this profession can be everything that everybody wants it to be. And so I would say that's the scariest part for me.
How about the most rewarding?
You know what? It's the small things for me. When people feel like they're safe, the most rewarding thing when I was a captain at Tenderloin Station, was an individual came up to me and had lived there for a really long time. And he said, you know, for the first time, I was able to walk to the store at night and feel safe. Those are the moments in which, you know, are rewarding, or, you know, having a jacket for somebody that's cold that has a jacket that's completely wet, or, you know, the small things, not the, you know, you put on social media or the media catches on to, but the small things of feeding people or, you know, just listening to somebody when they're having the worst day.
Mm-hmm. Those are the ripples that change the world, right? Those little moments where you make someone's life better.
Exactly.
All right, so we are coming close to the end of our conversation, and we always like to end talking about inspiration. But for our listeners who listen to the show, they know that one of the things that I love to talk about when we talk about inspiration is actually failure. As I think a lot of people don't acknowledge it enough, talk about it enough, we hide it, we ignore it. And so then that means our kids don't hear us talk about it. And I think it's an important part to acknowledge, particularly for young women. So can you tell us about a big failure in your life or career?
You know, there was a certain point in which I don't want to admit this. So I kind of gave up. It wasn't that long ago. And I gave up in trying to create change because I felt I was just being hit over the head ongoing. And I felt so guilty because of the people that depended on me. And it really did change how I looked at both my job and myself. And, you know, I am my own worst critic. I will beat myself up to no end. If I feel like I failed someone or I didn't succeed. And there was a moment in which I actually just, I wasn't doing what I had always set out to do. And so I would say that would be my failure. And now I'm here and it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that with us. I think it's just critical for young people to hear that life is tough, right? That hard things happen and that we all have these moments, right? But that resilience is a critical skill. And just like leadership, resilience is something that you can practice.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't fall down and get back up, then how do you know how to get back up? I mean, and do it in a way that is, that catapults you into a different position. And if, you know, I don't think you have to fail in order to succeed.
Absolutely. All right. On the flip side of the coin, though, tell us about a big success in your life or career, something that you're the most proud of.
You know, I will tell you that having a learning disability and having the struggles I've had as a young person, I'm old now, so I can say that. The success is being where I'm at. Becoming a commander in South Scope Police Department, being the chief here, no one would have ever expected it. They didn't expect it. They actually didn't expect me to come to Lincoln. It was a bit of a surprise to them. but I did it because I was making a decision for myself. And at some point, and women are not good at this, make a decision for yourself, not everybody else, because you've had a lifetime of making decisions based on how other people are impacted or feel. And sometimes it is really about yourself.
What is your biggest piece of advice to young women finding their way?
Ugh, you have to risk. You have to risk, and you have to be okay with having obstacles. You don't stop. You don't. I mean, so many people just stop and then won't take that risk. But if you see an obstacle, you got to figure out how to get over it or around it. Because that's how you become a better person. That's how you succeed in life. No one should tell you can't. And you know, that was a hard lesson for a long time for me, is that I was always told, no, you can't. And I would tell any young person that if you can dream it, you can do it.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Chief Ewens.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Girls Code Lincoln is a 501c3 nonprofit organization in Lincoln, Nebraska, where we strive to ignite passion for technology and leadership in young women with the long-term goal of closing the gender gap in STEM. Learn more at girlscodelincoln.org. Thanks to our sponsors, including Fuse Co-working for our beautiful space, the Nebraska Governance and Technology Center at the University of Nebraska for technical services, and mentors Huddle, Assurity, Emeritus, and Don't Panic Labs for their organizational support. Want to hear more from Women in Coding? Tell your friends about this podcast and share it on social media. Word of mouth is our best advertising. Our theme music is Then It Went Like by Grace Mesa. Thank you and have a great day. Make it nice.